the Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources, and with that, we are going to start right off with, get down here, 2089, right? Open a public hearing on 2889. We'll have a short explanation from our administrator, and then if we can have our other person brought into the room. And while they're doing that, let me just go over the things I had mentioned just before in the order that we're doing. We are going to move all of the bills before the exotic animal bill. That one will come at the end, and hopefully we'll have about an hour for that. So with that, I'll have our administrator go forward.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2889 requires the State Parks and Recreation Department to provide devices to individuals with disabilities and elderly persons in order to access trails for hiking in state parks. The bill exempts the department from providing devices in certain cases and requires the department to adopt rules for the provision of the devices. There is a subsequent referral to the Ways and Means Committee on this bill. There's no revenue impact, and we have not received a fiscal impact statement.
So, at the beginning, the first person we'll have is Tom, is it Rudy?
Rudy.
Thank you.
Will this mic pick?
It will. We have very sensitive new mics. And in fact, thank you for asking that. If you have a cell phone in your possession, and it is in the on position, as mine is, you need to turn it off. It can't even be in the on because it'll pick up the signals and affect the system. So, thank you.
And Blackberries.
And Blackberries and all that kind of stuff.
Mr. Chairman, honorable representatives, I wish to introduce myself. I'm Tom Rudy of Milwaukee, Oregon, and I am a quadriplegic from diving in the river, and I also have MS, but I still have not lost my fondness for the outdoors. So what I have here is a chair. It's one I have that I make. It's called Easy Hiker. And there's another one in Canada called Trail Rider. And there's another one that just came out in Yakima. So they're available. And I would like to suggest that the parks in the state of Oregon have these available for use by persons like myself that don't have one. You could rent them, say, for $25 a day. I rent it for $40 a day, but they could get a deal at the parks. They would be available. Maybe you'd have two at each park, you know, that are well visited, like Silver Falls or wherever. And people could check them out. They just submit their driver's license, and away they go. I have found this to be very helpful. I took my first ride in on Eagle Creek Trail near Bonneville Dam in the Columbia Gorge. And it was, you know, it's kind of a cliff there. It was really, it worked just excellent. And I would encourage you to take a ride in it and try it out later if you have time. I'm going to go back to Portland. I have two documents here for your review. One is from Janet Zeller, who is the head of the Forest Service in Washington, D.C. for disabilities, disabled people. And she is responsible for enforcing the ADA. And she has authorized this chair here to be used in wilderness areas. So, and as you may know, the wilderness areas in the state are very protected. And the reason she allows it is because, one, it's the only way I can get into the wilderness. My favorite place is Jefferson Park up at Mount Jefferson. And I plan to go back there. I had hoped to go this year, but I've had hospitalization problems. So I'm going to aim for next year. And so the other reason is that they're low impact on the environment. And I grew up here in Oregon. I'm from Portland. And I have hiked many trails. And I'm an Eagle Scout in the Boy Scouts of America. and I can attest to the wonderful experience that our natural resources offered to us. And for those of you who have walked or hiked out in the wilderness, you can also probably attest to its natural beauty. And I have another document here it has a picture of the chair, and you can keep it, take it with you. And an article that was written in the Oregonian a couple years ago. So, as you can see, I'm not fast-paced, but I'm moving slow. And I'm trying to get this, in the hands of the public and others like myself who enjoy the outdoors, especially elderly, too. There's more to see at Oregon parks than the parking lot.
That's true. Thank you very much. Any questions from...
Just have a comment, Mr.
Yes.
Chair. Thank you, Mr. Rudy, for bringing this bill. I happen to represent the district that you like to hike in, the Columbia Gorge. I live in Corbett and very well know the trail, so thank you.
I've had good reviews from the Forest Service. I'm cautious to make sure they really understand what's up before they make any decisions. And I think initially, if I actually start making these, the first use would be for search and rescue. It has a ski attachment, and I've tried that out. It works great. I tried it out at government camp at Summit Ski Area. And it's great, man. I used to be on ski patrol at Mount Hood. It isn't quite the same, but it's dang close. And so this is a lot less expense than helicopters. And helicopters, as you may know, get into trouble when they get in adverse conditions. So this is a much less expensive and safer choice.
Thank you.
They also have more impact on the environment. Helicopters do, so...
We just did a restoration on the Vista House to put the bathrooms, the lower, and it worked out beautifully. It took them a lot longer than they should have, but
well, that's but a beautiful monument.
Yeah.
So, another question? We have a couple people.
Just a comment. I just think it's great. My best friend growing up that Representative Roblin knows as well, he had muscular dystrophy, and he was my next-door neighbor, and I spent almost every day of my life recreating with him, and there were places we just couldn't go. He just couldn't get there, and he could have in that, but I was reading the article, rocks and bumps, and it was just certain places we couldn't go, and I just think it's great what you're doing. Thank you.
Well, I've tried my electric wheelchair on the paved paths that are provided, and they're great for the first year or two, but then they start, going sideways.
Right.
Stuff. So this can go on any terrain. And I'm also wanting to mention that there are many families in the state that may or may not have a disabled child that can't go camping and include the child. They have to leave them wherever. And this would give them a way to get out. This will accommodate a car seat or whatever.
That's cool.
Thank you very much. We have two other people, Shirley Place and Jim, is it Hansen? If they want to come and do their testimony, they can come up here.
Go ahead.
And Jim?
My name's Jim Hansen. I'm a resident of Lake Oswego, and representing McPherson's district. And that's also where Tom was born, right off of Lake Oswego. And I'm a fraternity brother of Tom's. Tom is actually my little brother at Chi Phi Fraternity at Oregon State University. And when we were at the university, we used to ski and hike, and we'd get in the car and run over the beach and everything else. Well, correct me if I'm wrong, Tom, about 3 years or 4 years after college, Tom got in a diving accident, became a quadriplegic, and he's barely been able to move his hands. He recently lost his right leg with the same kind of bed sores that Christopher Reeves had, and it's been a struggle. But we've managed to do stuff like head down and I've got a plane. We've flown down in my plane down to the Beavers game down in Las Vegas, and just had great times down in Phoenix, and just had great times together. And this machine is unbelievable. As a certified musher, if you will, I've risen to my level of incompetency, but this thing really works. It works on side hills. There's a guy in the front, a guy in the back, so you got four corners that you're holding on to. You can kind of lift it over things if you have to. It can go through streams, through water. I mean, I feel pretty comfortable as a 50-year-old and a guy in front just sort of kind of walking down the Capitol steps. Just no problem. I mean, it'll bounce a little bit, but that's part of being outdoors. And so it works. And for a guy like Tom, to be able to get out where he loves it the most, he represents the culture of Oregon. I mean, he was an Eagle Scout. He's absolutely a wonderful person that's done tremendous things in his life despite his handicap. And if we can support him and his vision to try to bring this throughout the country and throughout the world, I think that that's something that we really should be doing as a state, even if it's a little bit of an inconvenience, if it's a little bit of cost, and isn't that much either. So I really encourage you to pass this on and vote in favor of Senate Bill 2889 or House Bill 2889. Thanks.
And I guess I would ask one question. Being the person that's grabbing one end or the other, do you think there's no real need for explanation or any other kind of stuff to show two people? They just show up and they've got three people. They could do it without causing any problem or harm.
Well, a couple of thoughts on that. First of all, it's a really stable thing. The center of mass is so low. It's, I try to compare this to, like, everybody's used a wheelbarrow, right? It's a lot easier than a wheelbarrow. Okay. I mean, a lot easier.
Invite Representative Lieberman to walk me out.
Yeah. Let's do it. Come on, grab the phone. Well,
no, right now, since we have so many other bills we have to hear.
It's very easy. Very simple, and it's not tiring. We've gone for an hour plus, and just no problem. And I'm getting to be old, so.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Thanks. And we'll look forward. I'll talk with the rest of the committee when they get back, and we'll decide if we can work this into a work session. So thank you. Thank you. So we're going to. Is there anyone else here that had come to speak? Seeing that, I will thank you, and we'll close the hearing on 2889. Thank you very much. Public hearing. Let's go with. We're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3512. So, a short explanation.
Mr. Chair, members, House Bill 3512 would create an 11-member task force on agricultural workforce needs. The bill directs the Speaker of the House and Senate President to appoint two legislative members each and to jointly appoint six additional members. The governor is directed to appoint one member to represent the public. The bill establishes the purpose of the task force, and the items of the task force is to study. There is no subsequent referral, no revenue impact. There may be a fiscal impact, but we've not received a statement.
Thank you. And we have with us Representative Thatcher, so we'll let her go first. And Representative Flores.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Kim Thatcher, representative from Kaiser, St. Paul, and Newburgh. And I'm here to testify in favor of the concepts put forth in House Bill 3512. And also to offer an amendment for the committee to consider. I think you have it before you today. The amendment would require the task force to study the effectiveness of the Employment Department's administration of the federal H-2A agricultural worker visa program. For those of you who are familiar with agriculture and those who are not, anyway, the visa program allows agricultural agricultural employers to hire foreign workers legally. Other states have been using it quite effectively, and some agricultural say that five times fast. Some agricultural employers have told me that this, whether for real or just perception-wise, that the program could be administered a little easier here. It's a difficult program, I admit, on the federal level. It is. We just don't want to make it more difficult on the state level. In response, I co-sponsored House Joint Resolution 20 along with Representative Flores as part of what we had called our Sensible Immigration Reform Package. But HJR 20 would direct the Employment Department to work closely with the agricultural industry concerning the H-2A program. This would simply add, another task to the task force recommendations in the bill. I believe that the task force should be specifically tasked with looking at the H-2A visa program, see if expanding its usage here in Oregon and promoting its usage here would be a good way to meet some of the agricultural workforce needs here in the state. And I hope the committee would consider amending the bill with this amendment. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll have Representative Flores first, and then we'll have some questions if anybody has them.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. And for the record, I am Linda Flores, State Representative for House District 51, which is Clackamas, Damascus, Boring, Estacada, a little urban, a little suburban, and a lot of rural. I'm here primarily just to lend my support to Representative Thatcher as she has presented you with the amendments for consideration to the bill that you're considering today. Thrust for the focus on the H-2A discussion for me began during the interim quite a number of months ago, and some concerns that were expressed by a constituent operation in my district. So I do not want to prolong the discussion other than to lend my support. Would be happy to answer any questions should you have them, and short of that, I'm going to hop back into my other committee.
Any questions for this panel? No, I thank you both for bringing these forward, and we will duly consider them. And as I talked to Representative Thatcher, I don't like to move new amendments into anything without having some time for everybody to look at them. So we'll probably schedule it. We will schedule this for another work session in the future, and we will consider these. So thank you very much.
Thank
you,
Mr.
Chair,
for putting that on your agenda. Yeah. We do appreciate that.
Thanks.
I just want to add also that right now, as I understand it, there are 18 employers using this program, or at least certified to use it, and there are over 2,500 agricultural employers in the state.
Thank you.
When I was a staff person for then Senator Wyden, we were trying to take a look at H-2A, and it needs some looking at.
Okay.
We are very well aware how cumbersome it is at the federal level, and but it has been used successfully in a few states as well.
Thank you both. Don Schellenberg. Schellenberg, thank you.
Thank you, Chair Oldwood, members of the committee. Don Schellenberg, representing the Oregon Farm Bureau. When someone says 9/11, there's no question about what they're referring to. The question that soon dawned on everyone was, what is going to be the impact? The resulting impacts, of course, were many and varied. Some were immediate and short-lived, while others took some time to develop and are more long-lasting. I speak, of course, of the labor supply that has a long and successful history in the production of labor-intensive crops in Oregon, of fruit, vegetables, Christmas trees, and nursery products. With increasing border enforcement activities because of 9/11 and other changes that discourage immigration and guest workers from coming to Oregon, the agriculture industry is fighting to maintain its pre-9/11 level of production. The whereases, if that's the correct plural word for whereas, of House Bill 3512 do an excellent job of enumerating the challenges that all of Oregon and agriculture industry in particular face in trying to meet the labor needs and the needs of those who do the labor of producing our food and fiber. The Oregon Farm Bureau supports House Bill 3512 and the -1 amendments, I assume they're -1, and ask that you send the bill to the House floor with the due pass recommendation. Thank you for the opportunity to add our support to the sponsors and co-sponsors of this important bill.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Seeing none, thank you. Also, we have Rebecca Nance from the Employment.
Thank you, Chair Roble, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Rebecca Nance. I am the legislative coordinator with the Employment Department. We, too, welcome the opportunity with this -1 amendment to take a look at the H-2A visa program. It is a federal program. We are underfunded by the federal government to render employer assistance with this. It's heartening to know that Representative Klim has some experience with this. We're anxious to participate in any way that we can. We have already met with the Nursery Association as well as the Farm Bureau and the sponsors of the Dash One. And should you need anything from the Employment Department, we're ready, willing, and able to help out.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Seeing none, thanks. Representative Klim, did you want to make any comments? You're also one of the sponsors as well as I am in this bill.
I think it's a good bill.
It's important. Yeah, and from my perspective, we have had problems in the last number of years in getting enough agricultural workers, and whatever we can do to help figure out how to get this to work better for us is going to be helpful for our state's economy. So, any other questions on this one?
I have a question.
Yes.
Why not any Republican sponsors?
I don't know.
Well,
I'm signed
on. You
want to
sign on?
I do want to.
Well, let's get it. Then we won't move anything.
Oh, no, that's okay. Go ahead and move it.
Okay. Well, we're not going to do it today.
Oh, okay. That
was my question. So we're going to, anybody else here that came to speak on 3512 before I close it? Thank you. We're going to close our public hearing on 3512, and we will schedule a work session for that in a very short time, since we only have a few days left.
Yeah, no kidding.
Pardon?
Yeah, that's right.
Yes. Next, we're going to open a public hearing on 3025. So,
oh, okay.
We'll have a short explanation.
Mr. Chair, members, House Bill 3025 modifies the definition of land use decision and limited land use decision to exclude decisions of local government that approve or withhold approval of final subdivision of a partition plat or that determines whether final subdivision or a plat substantially conforms to a tentative plan. There's no subsequent referral, no revenue impact, and no expenditure impact.
Thank you. With that, we'll have John Chandler come on forward. You want Brian Moore as well?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, John Chandler, Oregon Home Builders Association. As I was listening to the Administrator read the summary of this bill, it even sounded boring to me. This is one of those very technical land use bills that involves an issue that generally only fools lawyers. A few years ago, last session actually, we passed a bill, this legislature passed a bill, to fix what was effectively known as the Hammer case, Hammer v. Clackamas County. In the Hammer case, a situation arose where in the subdivision process, you file a tentative plat. When you get started, the hearings occurred, public testimony is taken, so on, and then the final plat is filed. The filing of the final plat after all the local stuff is done generally is pretty much, it is perfunctory, it's mechanical. It involves a surveyor, involves other people looking at it, but the end product is reflective of what has gone on before it. In the Hammer case, the Court of Appeals, actually LUBA, the Land Use Board of Appeals, final, and then the Court of Appeals both found that the act of the signature of the surveyor on the final plat might constitute a land use action under Oregon land use law. Land use action meant you had to have notice and opportunity for a hearing on a signature. That was a silly outcome. We brought a bill forward. The legislature passed it last session fixing that. It occurred in ORS 92.100 sub 7 for those of you who want to keep up at home. After last session, the real estate section of the bar, in their helpful fashion, published an end-of-session summary in which one of the writers opined that while we had fixed the surveyor loophole, there were other processes in the local approval time between the preliminary plat and the final plat that also might possibly be construed as perhaps requiring notice and hearing. We want to try to close that. We're trying to do so with House Bill 3025. As you can see, the list of people working on the bill included the bankers, the counties, the cities, the home builders, the city of Salem, and the Oregon Association of Realtors. We have made some amendments to the bill, and I discussed with the chairman briefly earlier, thanks to the eagle eyes of the League of Cities. We found that we kind of over-amended in the Dash 2s. and we, with the chairs and committee's permission, would like to come back with a clean version of the bill. Essentially what it does, and Mr. Brian Moore is here with me, the land use attorney here in Salem, can go into some of the details. Essentially all it does is restore the law to where all of us that practice in this area thought it was prior to the Hammer case, that the act of recording or approving a final plat is not a land use action. All the land use discretionary stuff happens separate and apart from that. It doesn't affect anything of that sort. It just makes the process run the way that it's supposed to. I'll let Mr. Moore speak and then take questions, if you don't mind.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Brian Moore. I'm a land use attorney in Salem with the firm of Saufeld Griggs, and I'm here representing the interests of a good number of developers in the Mid-Willamette Valley who have come across the unintended consequence, I believe, of the Hammer case. The objective in 2005 with the prior House bill was to clean up the confusion from that case without any opposition. And unfortunately, due to some of the things that John has talked about, there was still some confusion. And frankly, since that 2005 bill, we've had a number of situations where, keeping in mind that this is a two-step process, the first step is when you go in for that tentative subdivision approval. And that's the process where there's all kinds of public involvement, the hearings, opportunity to appeal. The second is more of a surveyor function, but what was happening is we were finding people under the Hammer decision were coming in and using the Hammer decision to reopen the first decision to approve the partition or the subdivision, and that creates tremendous problems for a number of people. Not just, of course, we would say city staff. I don't represent them, but I think they would agree that it's created quite a bit of extra work, uncertainty, And for our developer clients, the biggest problem is now they've expended hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of dollars putting in water, sewer, storm, streets in a subdivision, only at the end of all of that to be told when they walk in to have the surveyor signature, maybe this isn't going to work. And if it is, it still might take you another year or two while your lender is waiting for you to sell lots and pay the lender back. And that's why you see, I believe, the bankers on here as well, because it's a tremendous problem that creates a tremendous amount of uncertainty in a situation where, for decades, it has been a very clear, once you've gone through the peril of getting your land use approval the first time, you shouldn't be subject to that same peril a second time, and therefore all of the costs and expenditures that come with it. So we're very much in support of hopefully the second and last installment of the effort to clean up the aftermath of the Hammer decision.
Thank you very much. Questions? Okay. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Next we have Linda Ludwig and Harlan Levy.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Linda Ludwig, League of Oregon Cities. I guess I have to thank Mr. Chandler for letting me know that I have an evil eye.
Oh.
But unfortunately, or fortunately.
We agree. We agree that it's a good idea.
We did catch a problem in the Datu amendments just today that does concern us with the verbiage withholds approval. And our interpretation that it would give LUBA some an additional purview that it does not currently have to judge on failure to act. That's concerning to us. So we do like the base bill, and we do understand some of the other proponents of the bill would like to take a look at the VA-2 amendment and maybe make some additional amendments to that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And we have agreement on that, so I think that's what we're going to let you do, but it has to be done quickly. Yes.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I am Harlan Levy, representing the Oregon Association of Realtors, here to support House Bill 3025, and whatever the amendment ends up looking like. We all know what the intention of this bill is. It's to address the Hammer decision. We thought we had it fixed last session in a bill that passed with wide bipartisan support. Both sides was signed by the governor. That bill did not apparently go where we needed it to, so we're trying to fix it again this session, and this is an important issue for a lot of different organizations, as you can see by the sponsorship of this bill. I know you've got a lot of people that want to testify on other things, so I will conclude my testimony. Be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We're whipping through these things pretty quickly, I'd say. We're going to close. Well, before we close it, I guess I would instruct, John, do you want to take the fixing of those amendments? Do you need something from us to get that? Okay, we won't get that to happen.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Nobody was here from the Association of Counties, so I guess, although it's within UGB.
This is UGB, isn't
it? Right.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure if the AOC, the Association of Counties, would have any weigh in. But, and then the other question was Metro, which I see in the audience. And it was a test.
We're sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, and counties is here too.
It was a test, actually.
Mr. Chair, we'll just coordinate. We're very supportive.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Everybody can get together with John. Thank you. Thank
you. And make sure he's awake.
That being said, we will close the hearing on 3025. Thank you very much.
At least he's honest.
I agree. That's very true. That one. So the next one would be a work session. I think everybody's okay with 2114. How are you on 2114? Well, I guess we can open.
2114.
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to open a work session on 2114. I think probably be available for us. We have two of our members in other committees happening at the same time testifying and going back and forth, so it's important to get everybody here when we're going to start working some bills. Okay.
No, 6 years ago. Well, this is the second part of that bill we worked on.
So with that, we will have our administrator give a short explanation.
Mr. Chair, members, House Bill 2114 was first heard in this committee on February 22nd. The bill is the one that deals with the stewardship agreement program of the Department of Forestry. Following the first public hearing, some of the folks who are interested in the program developed the Dash 1 amendments. And Lanny Quackenbush from Department of Forestry is here if you'd like for him to talk about the amendments. But you should all have a copy of the amendment in front of you or the hand engrossed version of it. This is just a work session, so please allow me to talk about
those. Lanny, do you want to talk about those? Come on up. Thank you.
The Dash 1?
It's hand engrossed, right? Yes, they're hand engrossed. They look like this.
Oh, yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, we can have a motion.
We'll move the Dash 1. I make a motion, Mr. Chair, to move the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2114.
Well, can we have maybe Lenny walk us through what the Dash 1s do?
Yeah.
I mean,
We won't. We have the motion. Okay. Representative Smith has made a motion to accept the Dash 1s. With that, we'll have a discussion of the Dash 1s. Thank you. And so here we are. Lanny.
Good afternoon, Chair Roble and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Lanny Quackenbush with the Oregon Department of Forestry. We requested that this bill be brought forward. Over the last 3 or 4 years, we've been working on implementation of the stewardship agreement legislation that was passed several years ago. And in that process, we identified some concerns with the bill as it was previously passed, and we were advised by our legal counsel that in attempting to add benefits or incentives to this stewardship agreement program that we really needed to seek legislative approval. So we assembled those into the bill that is before you, and we have proposed a number of things, the first being a series of potential funding processes for cost share incentives to forest landowners. As we discussed before, the first one is a separate and unique stewardship fund. We seek that because we want to be able to accept funds from sources that might not fit cleanly into the flexible incentives account, or to be able to fund projects that might not fit well into the OWEB grant fund. In agreement with OWEB, the amendment drops the referral or the reference to the OWEB grant fund. The assurance that we felt after examination that existing statutory authority was broad enough, commitment with OWEB to work out processes so that perhaps forest landowners could be more successful in accessing those. The second issue before us in the Dash 1 amendments is a slight rewording of what we call regulatory certainty. And to be perfectly honest with you, there are still concerns with that, even with this Dash 1 amendment. There are co-workers or the people we've been working with on this from Defenders of Wildlife are concerned that this still gives us a carte blanche authority. Our understanding was more restricted, and kind of the discussion is rather than continue to try to get wording exactly the way we would like it, we would rather move it forward. We all have a common understanding if we don't achieve maybe wording that people are more comfortable with in the Senate, then, you know, the final is that we would work through administrative rule process to implement the understanding that everyone in the Rules Advisory Committee had for the purpose of regulatory certainty. And I want to mention that kind of on the other side, representatives from Oregon Small Woodlands also have some concerns that what I call the take-back clause, which isn't being proposed for amendment here, but the bill itself has other portions that are very important to all of us, so we want to just kind of trust each other and not get hung up on this particular section of the bill. Not changing in the bill, but just to point out to you, this reconnects this stewardship agreement program to the Forest Practice Program. That's very important to people like Mike Barnes, current president of Oregon Small Woodlands. The final amendment is moving the exemption from public disclosure from the statute, which is an absolute exemption, to the statute that says these are not subject to public disclosure unless there's an overriding public interest. That was a discussion and agreement we had with the Newspaper Publishers Association, and the indication that we received was by moving it to the section of law that's not absolute, that dealt primarily with their concern.
Any discussion? Do you know anybody any questions for our
Mr. Chair?
Yep.
I do as far as so because I'm reading that I know the Defenders of Wildlife have been working with you very closely on this bill. So are and I don't know if is Bruce Taylor here today?
I don't know. I know that Cheryl's gone on a bike ride, so
right. So I guess I'm curious about what's the status. I heard you talk a little bit. So you're still working through some of this language? Or
yes. I exchanged email messages, actually, with Bruce yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they would like that particular statute to be a little more tight. And we discussed that with legislative counsel. They told us they'd take another look at it, and they didn't really change it. So my understanding is Defenders of Wildlife still have the concern, but like us and like the others that have worked on this, they don't want to derail the bill because of that concern.
Okay. Just to follow up, the concern is about how that part of the statute will be interpreted. Is that correct, if I'm reading that right?
That's correct. The way you can read it right now, the way I describe it is you could do something extra for salmon and get a regulatory certainty that would hold you to the existing standard for spotted owls, even if future rules made spotted owl protection more stringent. That's really not the way we intend to operate. It's not the way we intended this form of regulatory certainty to operate. We wanted it to be focused on the practices and the species of particular concern that are being addressed.
Okay. I guess there's no resolution to this.
Not yet. Well, they have said that they have agreed to put stuff into rule if need be, to clarify.
All right. Well, and I think it's important to for the legislative record also about what the intent of the language
is. And I think that's been good here, too. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
So there's general agreement that we're going to keep working on this until we get it the way people have all agreed to it, kind of outside of here.
That's my understanding, yes.
Okay. We would like to see that continue. Mm. As I'm hearing this,
I'll withdraw my motion.
I know. So we have a motion. Is there anybody who disagrees with our dash ones? Seeing none, the dash ones are accepted.
Does it have a referral?
We've gotten an agreement to have the subsequent referral.
So. Do I mention that in my motion? Okay, Mr. Chair, I'll move House Bill 2114 as amended with a rescission of the due pass and a rescission of the referral.
Mm-hmm. To Ways and Means.
To Ways and Means.
Okay, so we have a motion from Representative Smith that we pass House Bill 2114 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the subsequent referral to Ways and Means be rescinded. Any discussion? Okay. Seeing none, we'll have a roll call vote.
Representative Maurer?
Excused.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Boquist?
Aye.
Representative Clem?
Aye.
Representative Dingfelder?
Aye.
Representative McPherson?
Aye.
Chair Roby?
Aye. Motion passes. This has so much to it, I think it probably needs to have an explanation on the floor, so I don't think we can do it that way. Jackie, you want to do that so that you can also put on the record some things?
Yeah. Okay. I've been working on this for several years. So,
so we'll have it carried by Representative Dingfelder. Thank you very much.
Yeah, well, I'll do my best.
Okay, we're down to 2971.
Yep.
Okay, now we will open a work session on 2971. And as I explained, and I feel bad, we are running out of time with respect to all of these bills, with respect to having a whole lot more time to have public testimony. And so we are going to have a work session, and we'll... is this the dash two?
As is, dash two.
Dash two.
Oh. Mr. Chair, I move the House, or dash two amendments to House Bill 2971.
We should have an explanation. Oh, we'll do that. Representative Smith has moved the dash two amendments to House Bill 2971. Do I have any discussion? And first we'll get, a short explanation of the dash twos and the bill.
Mr. Chair, members, the dash two amendments to 2971 are the amendments that were presented by the Department of Fish and Wildlife. They would amend the subsection 3 of the bill on line 10 to add language related to Fish and Wildlife Department being authorized to appoint persons to act as agents for the department for the purpose of using one or more dogs to hunt or pursue black bear or cougar. And then further, at the end of that section, there is new language that specifies that such hunt or pursuit must be in compliance with the management plans for those two animals and that the agent would act on the department's behalf subject to the department's direction and control implementing those specific management programs. And then I guess the final thing in that section is that it prohibits the agent from engaging in any other hunting or pursuit while acting on the department's behalf.
Okay. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair, I need to understand the difference between the dash ones and the dash twos, and I'm actually hunting around now to see if I have
the dash ones.
Yep. You should have a hand-engrossed version of the dash ones.
But do I have
the amendment itself?
The amendment itself, or is it just the hand-engrossed version?
Mm-hmm.
Here's a copy here. You want the dash twos or the dash ones?
Dash twos are what I don't have in my bill file.
Okay, you should have those.
And so then I need to understand what are the
so we're,
what are the differences between the dash two and the dash one?
So I'm going to be opposed to the twos. I was supportive of the ones, but since we're not moving the ones and the twos, just to confuse you,
right.
I will be a no.
Do you want to try to give a short explanation of the difference?
Of the dash ones?
Okay.
I will do my best.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, the dash ones were the amendments that Representative Buckley brought forward. And those amend the same section as the dash twos, but it restricts to the appointment of the agent by the department to circumstances of an immediate response to something that's happened with a black bear or a cougar. It further, and that shows up on the hand-engrossed version just below line 12. It further directs the department to fix the compensation, prescribe the duties of the agents, and then limits the authority of the agent to act as an agent to the terms set forth in the written appointment that's required under section paragraph sub B of this section.
And the dash twos?
And the dash twos are broader. The dash twos would allow the department to appoint an agent to carry out the purposes of the management plans, not strictly in response to some event that's occurred.
So that's kind of the difference between.
Okay. Okay. Well, that's very helpful. And I support the dash ones and cannot support the dash twos because the dash ones are incident generated or driven, and that seems like the best policy choice is that we would be using this mechanism to respond to specifically identified issues with particular animals.
Okay. We will take a roll call vote.
This is on the amendments.
On the amendment dash two.
Yeah.
Dash twos. Okay.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Boquist?
Aye.
Representative Clem?
Aye.
Representative Binkfelder?
No.
Representative McPherson?
No.
Representative
Maurer,
excuse.
Chair
Rublin.
Aye. The dash twos are approved.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'll move House Bill 2971 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Smith has moved the House Bill, I'll get the number right, 2971 as amended to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Representative Plum.
Yeah, as thank you, Mr. Chair. Some of you know I also co-sponsored a similar bill, so it's not an incredible surprise that I'm going to be voting for this bill. And what's been interesting to me is I've heard from a lot of my constituents on both sides of the issue, actually, in the debate, is it always still seems to be about the Cougar Management Plan, which was set up through another process. It's not something we're reviewing in this bill. This bill says that if a cougar is going to be killed in one manner or another through any activity, whether it's incidental or the Cougar Management Plan, should the person have to be paid? My tax-paying constituents, I have some on both sides. Some say, yes, I'm fine having them paid. Many have said, I don't want to have to pay when someone else will do it for free, as long as they're operating within parameters and an ethical sort of boundary that the department will kick them out of the program if there's an abuse. And I just, regardless of how upset some of my folks are, I just can't see why we should have to pay somebody to go and harvest a cougar that's going to be harvested anyway when someone else will do it for free. And so I can't get past that. I'm going to support the bill.
I just wanted to echo the comments that my colleague, Representative McPherson, raised. That's the reason I'll be voting no, is because of the broadness of the dash twos.
Okay. Any other discussion? Seeing none, we'll take a roll call vote.
Representative Bowman?
Aye.
Representative Flynn?
Aye.
Representative Dinkfelder?
No.
Representative McPherson?
No.
Representative Maurer, excused. Representative Smith?
Aye.
Chair Rubin?
Aye. Motion passes.
Yes, I will, Mr. Chair.
Would you like to do this? Or I could? Or
I'd be delighted, and Beth will be there, too.
Okay. We'll have Representative Bolfus carry the bill. Thank you very much.
Yep.
Oh, thank you. Need to close the work session on 2971. And now we will open a public hearing on House Bill 3437. We'll have a short explanation.
Mr. Chair, members, House Bill 3437 adds members of the order Crocodilia to the definition of exotic animals in ORS 609305. The bill defines wildlife sanctuary, prohibits breeding of exotic animals, exempts certain organizations, institutions, and facilities from the prohibition against the possession of exotic animals, and allows temporary authorization to possess offspring of exotic animals. The bill has no fiscal impact in its original form, no subsequent referral, and no revenue impact.
Thank you very much. And we'll first have Kelly Peterson and Nicole. Come on. I didn't want to mess your last name up, Nicole, so I'll let you say it when you come up. You should have also received some amendments to this bill.
Mm-hmm. You should have dash three amendments in front of you.
And we have a number of people signed up to speak to this bill. And so what we are going to do, because we really have limited time, we need to be, if we're going to have a work session on the bill, we probably need to stop the discussion by about 4:50. How late are you available?
I was hoping to get out a little before 5 o'clock.
Okay.
But...
So maybe 45, and then we'll have some time to talk about it. So we have about 40 minutes worth of testimony. So with that, we'll get started.
Chair Roblin and committee members, my name is Kelly Peterson, and I'm the program coordinator for the Humane Society of the United States here in Oregon. And I'm testifying today on behalf of our 130,000 Oregon members and constituents. And I'm here to strongly support House Bill 3437, and it's the Dash 3 Amendment is what I'll be referring to. And just a little bit of background, Oregon currently does regulate certain types of exotic mammals, and those are primates, tigers and other wild felines, wolves and other wild canids, and bears, and as pets. And they must obtain people who have these a license under the Oregon Department of Agriculture. These are annual permits and licenses, and it requires the owner to comply with a series of housing requirements. House Bill 3437, the Dash 3, would prohibit future acquisitions of the animals as pets, and it would also add alligators and crocodiles and caimans to the list. Individuals can still keep their animals. They'll be grandfathered in. However, they just will not be able to acquire future exotic pets after the effective date. Essentially, really what it means is just no new license will be issued, and eventually phasing out the statewide permit program. And currently there are about 37 permits in Oregon statewide for the existing animals that are regulated. The Dash 3 Amendment, which unfortunately the original bill intended to have it in there, but it keeps the current list of exemptions, and that's important, for wildlife rehabilitation centers and USDA licenses that's added back in there pursuant to the Federal Animal Welfare Act. And this just means that everyone who holds a USDA breeder, dealer, research, or exhibitor license are exempt from this bill. They're not impacted, and they can acquire new animals. And it also includes facilities, obviously, that are accredited by the American Zoo Aquarium Association, which is the Oregon Zoo and the Wildlife Safari, as well as other facilities who display their animals. And there has been a lot of confusion up until about the bill and this particular issue. And you might even hear from people today who have a USDA license. So we just really wanted to put that on the record that the Dash 3 Amendment will not affect those people. And so the bill really is only targeting those people who keep wild exotic animals as pets. And it also, just to clarify, it doesn't include hybrids. And those are wolf hybrids and even the Bengal cats. Right, they're currently not included in the existing law, and so this bill doesn't impact them as well. Because the USDA doesn't regulate the keeping of alligators and crocodiles, there is an additional exemption in there, which is included in the Dash 3, that for approved facilities that house, educational facilities that house alligators and crocodiles, at the request of the state or local government, that would be also included in this bill. I've included just a list in the last year of just some incidences of escapes and some news reports and press releases. And just most recently, in the last couple weeks, there was a pet alligator that escaped in Coos Bay that was caught, and then a pet monkey that also escaped through a hole in a cage in Lincoln County. And fortunately, you know, this time both of those animals were caught. So there's quite a few other people that I know are here to testify and support the bill, so I'll let them also go into some of the more details of keeping these animals as household pets. But I thank you for the time.
Thank you.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Nicole Paquette, and I'm with the Animal Protection Institute. And I'm here on behalf of our thousands of members in the state of Oregon, and I want to thank you for allowing a public hearing on this issue. My organization is all too familiar with the problems that can come with the keeping of private, with exotic animals in private hands. In addition to assisting countless localities and states across the country passing laws on this issue, my organization owns and operates a primate sanctuary where we rescue hundreds of expats. The main issue that we have found with the expats have been they've been turned over to us because they not only pose a public safety threat, they've also have severe behavioral problems as a result of being a pet. The Animal Protection Institute also produced a detailed report of the state of the nation on the keeping of these animals. And what we found was featured on primetime just this past fall, and that we documented serious unreported exotic pet attacks to owners, children, and to the general public, as well as poor standards of care. The private ownership of exotic animals represents a real danger to the families, to the neighbors, and to the communities. This is evidenced by countless attacks that have happened across the country. Now, state governments have taken the lead on this issue of regulating the private possession, and to date, Oregon is one of 24 states that do not prohibit the private possession of exotic animals as pets. Obviously, that means 26 states do. Eight states have passed laws prohibiting these animals since 2000, so we've got this is a very growing trend across the country. Seven states this year during the 2000 legislative session have introduced bills that are regulating this issue. And in fact, Iowa and Washington's bills are sitting now on the governor's desk, and they are very similar to this particular bill. Currently, there is no federal oversight on the keeping of exotic animals as pets. The USDA, as Kelly said, regulates the exhibition, the breeding, and the dealing, but the only law that addresses the actual keeping of pets is the Captive Wildlife Safety Act, and that merely addresses the interstate transport, not the actual possession. So this law actually will complement what is in existing law. HB 3437 will do, what it will do is put in place a statewide framework for the keeping of these animals. Currently, just a handful of cities and counties have adopted local ordinances. These ordinances are not consistent with each other, resulting in a confusing patchwork. If this bill passes, there will be consistency with respect to what animals are deemed the most dangerous to keep throughout the entire state. So in light of our knowledge and considerable risks associated with keeping these animals, the time has come to prohibit them. So on behalf of our Oregon members, we respectfully encourage you to support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions for these two? I guess the thing I would ask is that, so the Dash 3s clearly identify that people holding a USDA license, this bill does not change anything that they're doing with respect to getting new animals or keeping the animals that they have.
General, that's correct. Okay. And it also doesn't prohibit people from
obtaining a license if they actually don't have a license currently.
So if you don't have a USDA license and you go through the process and get that, you can continue to have that USDA license?
That's correct.
Because that was the intention of those of us that wrote the bill, right. And we knew it wasn't there to begin with, so I wanted to make sure that the Dash 3s on the record
right.
are saying that USDA license, you're okay. Continue to do what you're doing.
Correct. That's
and
correct.
That is now on the record from the
on
people
the
who wants to
bill.
So
right.
thank you for that. Yes.
Mr. Chair, just you had mentioned the hybrid cats and you said the Bengal. Does that mm-hmm. also include other hybrid cats? I've got a letter about the Savannah and the Chausie.
Any hybrids. Yeah. I consulted with Don Hansen from the Oregon Department of Agriculture.
When I was talking, also I heard that hybrids become domestic
yes.
when they're hybrided. So that means they are taken off the list of as an exotic species. Yes. Is that correct?
That's correct. And then currently the Oregon state law doesn't even address hybrids, and we're not putting hybrids back in, and
okay.
we're not touching that.
Okay.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. We also have... Tony, is it Vesicchio? Savecchio. I knew I could have got it. I just feel bad about that. Sorry. From the Portland Zoo.
Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you for this opportunity. I'm Tony Vecchio. I'm the director of the Oregon Zoo and have been for the last 9 years. I have over 29 years' experience in 5 different AZA-accredited zoos. In the country, as well as having served on the board of directors of the Zoo Association, the Ethics Board, and I currently serve on the Animal Welfare Committee of the American Zoo and Aquarium Association, and numerous animal care groups. I'd like to start by saying I've known a lot of private individuals that have owned exotic animals in the past that have been extremely knowledgeable. Experts, in fact, that I've gone to for advice, and also that have taken phenomenal care of their animals. And in many cases, I feel like they've known more than zoo people have because they work so closely with one particular species. Unfortunately, I have found for every one of those individuals I've known, I've had to deal with many, many, many more cases of things that have gone bad with private individuals trying to own exotic animals. And in fact, at the zoo we get, I'd like to say dozens, but I think it would be hundreds, would probably be more accurate, of calls every year from people that have gotten into exotic animals as pets and it hasn't worked out. Some of the conversations, they're just so predictable. They acquired the animal, and they're calling the zoo to sell the animal to us. When I say no, then they try to give the animal to us. And when I say no, we don't have space, they get very angry and say they were told that the zoo would take these animals by the person that sold it to them. But quite frankly, we don't have room to rescue every exotic animal that doesn't work out, and there are hundreds of them out there. If I could tell you a story, one of the friends I had that was a private owner, was one of the most knowledgeable reptile guys I've ever known, and I used to call for advice, died unexpectedly from a brain aneurysm. And 2 days later, his wife and daughter came to see me and said, what do we do with all these animals that only he knew how to take care of, including 12-foot snakes and crocodilians? I'm afraid he had a caiman and alligator collection. And I couldn't help them because we didn't have space in the zoo, and not many people can deal with those animals. And it's one of my concerns about private individuals having exotic animals. At the zoo, we are a public institution. I could leave tomorrow, but the animal care would go on by trained professionals that work there. Private individuals don't have that public support that a zoo has, and it worries me. Even the most knowledgeable private individuals in the world have to worry about what's going to happen when they're not there. I will tell you also in the 70s, there's kind of a free-for-all. Zoos were fanatical about becoming conservation organizations, and we began to breed endangered species, feeling that was our role in conservation. And we quickly realized that we were creating a worse situation when you breed these exotic animals in captivity. If you don't have a place to send the offspring, you're actually contributing to more problems than you're solving. And that's why in 1980, the American Zoo and Aquarium Association created a program for zoos to consider all of the animals in the country in zoos as one population. It's a very organized breeding program. It's like computer dating for animals. I just bring this up because many private individuals will say they're conserving endangered species by breeding them in captivity. Breeding endangered species in captivity is not conserving animals if it's not part of a bigger picture, a bigger program, cooperative program. Then it really is just propagating a problem as you create more animals that don't have homes. For the most part, zoos do not work with animals that come out of private collections in their breeding programs, because if you don't know the genealogy of the animal, you really can't tell its genetic value, and genetic diversity is the kind of the goal of these programs. So I conclude, as I said, I've known many people that know a great deal, many private individuals know a great deal about exotic animals. I feel for them because I too, I know what it's like to bond with these animals, to care for them, to want to be close to them and work with them. That's why I got a job in the zoo. At home, I have two dogs and two cats that are rescue animals from the Humane Society. I think that is the appropriate animal for a private individual to have in their home. The exotics, I think, belong in a zoo. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you very much. And we got you out in time, so you can thank you. Again, we have a lot of people, and so what I'm going to do, we've had three people in favor. I'm going to go to those that are more than 100 miles away, because that's kind of a rule we have here, and I will take the next three people who have indicated they are against, so that we go back and forth, and then we'll go back as far as we can until we get there. If you can keep your comments fairly short and succinct, it gets more people a chance. So if you can say it, and the fewer words you can say it, the better. So the next group would be... And we'll get all three up there. Mike Daly from Deschutes County, Dave Hansen from Deschutes County, and Jesse Clark White from Lane County, who all were over 100 miles.
Good afternoon, Chair Roebland, members of the committee. Sitting here listening to the other testimony, we were not aware that the of an exemption for USDA folks. So my testimony basically revolves around some of that I am a USDA licensed person.
Great.
However, I might just comment one thing.
Sure.
I'm a county commissioner in Deschutes County. I'm a politician just like you folks are. And I do know that a lot of times, in order to get something done and done right, you need to get both parties together and talk about it. Because if this bill goes through the way it is, it's going to have a bad effect on some folks. And maybe we could get a bill together that would work for everybody. But we got to get together and talk about it. And none of that's ever been, you know, nobody's ever asked us to sit down at the table and go around the room and say, you know, how does this affect you, you, and you? And I would really like to see that happen. I know that there's an out-of-state organization that's promoting this. I'm a Simian Society of America board member, and we've got federal lobbyists that's working for us now just to help us in the same exact issue. And if we get them to sit down at the table, we could probably come to some agreement that works for everybody. And I own a primate. A small capuchin monkey, and it's on the back, a picture of him on the back page of your packet. But, you know, this bill says all non-human primates. Well, that includes a 400-pound gorilla as well as a little squirrel monkey. I mean, it includes all of these as well as mine, too. So, you know, I'm the first one to say, yeah, we need to regulate 400-pound gorillas. And we need to, there's something in between here that we could probably work with if we could all sit down at the table. But that hasn't happened. I mean, this organization that sponsors these bills every year, they don't want to sit down at the table. They just want to push something through. And I don't think, you know, being in the same business you're in, that's not the way we should operate. And, You know, you've got my testimony. I'm not even going to read it because I've said what I needed to say. But USDA, you know, exempts me because I am a USDA. But by the same token, there's some parts of this bill that definitely will harm people. And I think we could work that out if we could get at the table. And I hate to see this bill go forward without doing that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman and chair people, I'm Dave Hansen. I'm from Bend. Most people know me as a husband, father of four, a cattle rancher with the largest racer pool herder cattle in Deschutes County. I'm not into politics, but my next door neighbor is Ben Westland. Good neighbor, good guy. He's been very supportive over the years with these exotics. What most people don't know, because of the cat's sake, that we keep a very low profile. It is that we are the largest breeder of snow leopards in the United States. Other species that we raise in our breeding program are the Asian leopards, Bengal tigers, and the Barbary lions. We have just finished a new compound for the Barbary lion pride. The Barbary lions are completely extinct in the wild, with only a few in captivity in North America. I am licensed by the U.S. Department of the Interior, the Department of Agriculture, and Fish and Wildlife. I am told that we have one of the nicest compounds in the state. I started with one cougar 28 years ago. Since then, we have grown to be the largest snow leopard breeder in the United States. The snow leopard species is very difficult to breed in captivity, but we have had 38 snow leopards born in Bend. Our snow leopards are registered in the Helsinki, Finland World Snow Book Record, Snow Stud Book, and the lineage can be traced back to wild-caught animals. Don't shut us down. As you can see, we started out with one cat. But over the years, we have acquired seven species, of which four are endangered. We build a new section each summer for years with no outside money. Our kids have benefited from raising the exotics in many ways. We all love and respect the cats and take great care of them. The cats have been benefited greatly by being raised privately in a quiet country compound. By eliminating private owners, you would be eliminating people who are willing to sacrifice and are making a real impact by increasing the number of species substantially. If you would say that people should not keep a lion or tiger in an apartment, well, I'm 100% with you. There are already laws that govern people in this state. That is not what this bill would do. This bill would only shorten the lives of critically endangered cat species. You are intelligent people, or else you wouldn't be here. But if you let this small group of people that are trying to dictate policy to you and allow this unjust law to pass, you can be proud to know that you have helped erase four more species: the snow leopard, the Asian leopard, the Bengal tiger, and the Barbary lion from Earth.
So you would be exempt from this law, as it's now written with the new amendments, because you have a USDA license.
Yes.
Correct? Okay. So this bill would not affect you, but it would affect that individual owner that doesn't have the USDA license.
The bill I read.
I know. We changed that.
Oh, I didn't.
That's what we were trying to explain.
It wouldn't necessarily affect him.
Yeah, it would affect others.
Future people like him, just starting out, getting their first permit with a pet, and then deciding, like I did, that they have a deeper passion to help animals in general.
We'll let you go next. Yeah. But you would not be affected by the way it's written right now.
That's the way we started, right, with a pet that we put in a lot of money into it, and we've had a lot of education from all over the United States and the world on this.
Okay, we'll go to our next.
Thank you. Chair Robin, members of the committee, I'm an Oregonian opposed to HB 3437. We already have fair and effective legislation, and this bill would do nothing but attack our right to own animals.
Great.
Exotic animals pose no unreasonable threat to safety or the ecology of the state, and what's more, current legislation already assures that they don't. We already have excellent laws in place. Representative Roblin, you expressed concerns about escapes and releases. It's my view as an educator who has dealt with numerous exotic pet owners and situations across the country that an illegal pet held with no regulatory oversight is far more likely to be held in substandard housing or caging from which it can escape. It's far more likely to be released if the owner cannot legally place it in a new home. It's better to allow these new owners, allow the ownership, maintain regulatory oversight so that we can monitor the situation these animals are being kept in. There are approximately 500,000 illegal ferrets in California. Eliminating exotic animal ownership is an impossible goal. It's just not going to happen. It's better for the state to continue fair and reasonable management of exotic animals. Also, just want to address very briefly the concerns that some of our animal rights lobbyists expressed about unwanted animals in sanctuaries and zoos. Let's just say, for instance, that I die. Under current regulations, a good friend of mine who does not currently own a permit, or my mother who does not currently hold a permit, could apply for a permit and keep my animal with all of the knowledge that I've passed on to them. Under this new bill that you're proposing, I can't find a new legal home for my animal with somebody who does not already hold a permit under the ODA regulations. Animal sanctuaries across the country are filled with animals that were displaced because of ban laws and had to go to a sanctuary and a sanctuary only, which are already overcrowded beyond capacity because nobody else was legally allowed to hold these animals. So by banning, you do create some additional issues which are deliberately not highlighted by some of the animal rights folks. Thanks for allowing me to speak, and if anybody has questions.
Yeah, any questions?
I kind of did have a question, which I think it'll help. I just am trying to figure out, so you're permit holders, but you mentioned that's not how you started. Is it impossible to get a permit until you first try it with your own snow leopard or Bengal tiger as a pet? Which, yeah, I mean, it sounds a little...
Well,
do people have a Bengal
works,
tiger just as a pet?
No.
Okay, I didn't think so. I'm sorry. I'm just
The way it works in Oregon currently, under the current regulation, is if you plan to have the animal as a pet, you must have an Oregon Department of Agriculture permit. If you plan to engage in commercial activities such as breeding, exhibiting. I happen to be a USDA educational exhibitor. I teach people about exotic animals. That's what I do. So if you want to breed or exhibit these animals, then you have to apply for the federal USDA permit. When we talk about somebody starting out as a pet owner, you're talking about somebody starting out as I did, somebody who wanted to own a serval, which is a small wild cat. I became so passionate about this animal that I decided I wanted to begin education efforts and become much more involved in exotic animals, and I went to the federal side of it. With this bill as proposed, I would have had to, well, you know what, I want to start out as an educational exhibitor, or I think I want to start a business breeding exotic animals. I would have had to go to that step. It's not something that would have occurred to me to do. As it is, I decided to have a pet, just the way he decided to have a pet cougar. He's now the largest snow leopard breeder in the country. It's good to give somebody a legal avenue where they can explore this, and it's almost invariably the people who got into this as a personal interest who are now heading zoos, breeding programs, wildlife sanctuaries, and so forth. In fact, one of Oregon's largest wildlife sanctuaries, Wildcat Haven, was started by a woman who purchased a pet bobcat from a newspaper ad. She's now rescued over 80 animals. So that's where the starting out process lies. And this bill would prohibit new ODA licensees, which basically eliminates that starting out step. And it eliminates, again, say I were to become incapacitated I want to give my serval to somebody who is better able to care for it, unless they're a current ODA licensee or a commercial exhibitor or breeder under USDA, I can't do it.
And to add to that, if you wanted to breed endangered species like the snow leopard, you would contact the USDI, the Department of Interior, and they have regulations that require knowledge and one of the questions they'll ask you, what is your expertise in snow leopards? Before we'll give you a license to breed snow leopards, show us that you can do that and know what you're doing. And so over the years, that it's gotten tighter and tighter, so people can't get these licenses because of so many these animal rights people. But they want to know where you get your knowledge, because they do a good job of only issuing permits to people that do have knowledge on them.
Also, as an additional note, the USDA, we're talking a lot about USDA exemptions. As an administrative rule, they require 2 years of prior experience before they will issue a permit.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
One question of the committee. This bill specifically prohibits breeding of exotic animals. Are you saying that if you're USDA, you can still breed them?
It exempts you completely.
So it's a direct conflict, basically, which doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
The amendment would allow you to breed them. But I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
I do understand what you're saying.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks. I do, but. Next, we have Jackie and Scott, is it Beckstead, who are over 100 miles. Well, we might as well get three up, and so, and also we can go with Jan Mothershod of Washington County, and then we'll start the next group of. If you want to come up, you can come up here with them as well. That'll be the people who are for, and then we'll go to the next group of three who are against. So, yes.
Mr. Chair, representatives, I just want to thank you for hearing us. I'm Jackie Beckstead, deputy with the Lincoln County Sheriff's Office. I do animal services for Lincoln City and Newport. I've been asked to come here today to submit in writing the Oregon Animal Control Council's opinion and endorsement of Bill 3437, along with the Lincoln County Sheriff's Office and Lincoln County endorsement. We've recently passed our own ban on exotics in our county, which grandfathers in previous animal owners and their pets. Exotic animals are not and should not be considered pets for many reasons, and therefore we contend that ownership by private parties should be prohibited in the state of Oregon. Exotic animals are not domesticated in the sense that they still retain wild instincts. Recently, in Lincoln City, probably 2 months ago, there was a wolf that we did not know was in the city, and it was tied with a big chain in the backyard, and it happened to get out of its chain, came around down the street where a man was walking his little Pomeranian. It crouched down from a far distance. He picked up his Pomeranian. The wolf took off, which he thought was a big white dog. He put his Pomeranian down and took off on his walk like he did, not realizing that it possibly had any wild instincts at all to come back around him, and came over a hedge and grabbed his Pomeranian. Now, how he got his Pomeranian from this wolf still amazes me, but he did, and it's alive and stitched up. So, but the sad thing is the wolf is not alive. It got put down. Exotic animals carry diseases not commonly found in Oregon. Exotic animals are often dangerous when they escape. Exotic animals like bears, alligators, crocodiles, large cats, monkeys, etc., can cause serious damage to humans and animals alike. Approximately 3 weeks, Easter. I cooked Easter dinner for my family. got a call. I'm the only animal control in the county, even though I'm Newport and Lincoln City. I assist the sheriff deputies throughout the county on emergencies like abuse, neglect, and exotics. There was a little capuchin monkey escaped. The owner was gone. When I showed up, I saw the hole through the dog kennel in the backyard. The monkeys lived there for 2 years. Would have never known it except the dogs. There was five dogs in the yard, and they had pulled a hole in the dog kennel, and the capuchin monkey was woohoo kicking it up all over. The animal owner loves his monkey, but it is a serious, dangerous animal out of that cage. Well, and not in the surroundings it needed for its stimulation and care. With the animal owner home, he can bring it in at night. It can't be in with the other adults in the house unless he's home. He is the one who can control the capuchin monkey, which he loves dearly. Even though our county just banned exotics, this man did not have a permit. We would not have known he was even there except for this escape, which scared a lot of people. I admit, on my way there, I stopped at the squad room, put in exotic monkey diseases, and printed out 7 pages of diseases you can catch from monkeys. Then called my vet, just in case he knew the monkey owner, and again was told how serious it is, wear goggles, wear masks, wear everything, don't let any bodily fluids, you know, come in contact with you. Many of the exotics are obtained not in all the legal routes, especially not with the county laws or state laws. Most animal control, animal welfare, law enforcement, emergency services workers have little to no training on how to handle a situation regarding an exotic animal. The Oregon Animal Control, along with the Sheriff's Office, strongly does agree, though, that the responsible people who already have these permits should be able to keep their permits for their exotic animals. We also feel that wildlife sanctuaries, rehabilitators, and USDA license holders should not be affected by this House bill. We strongly agree that the state of Oregon should become proactive in prohibiting possession of exotic animals. Many states already do not allow the ownership of exotic animals, and we feel that if we don't make this a blanket over throughout the whole state, it makes it harder for us keeping track of them in the Department of Agriculture and USDA to know where they are, keep track of them, know what kind of circumstances they're in, and we don't want Oregon to be the place where everybody comes with their exotics. Thank you.
I'll try to keep everybody a little lower.
Sorry.
Yeah. I understand. Thanks.
Chair Roblin, committee members, my name is Scott Beckstead, and I am from Walport, Oregon. I have been an animal welfare advocate for most of my adult life. I've been around animals for my entire life. I'm an animal lover, very concerned with animal welfare. I also incorporate animal law as an important part of my law practice in Walport. And I recently just finished my last term as the mayor of Walport, and so the first point I want to make is, as someone who has served as an elected official in a small town, Walport cannot afford full-time animal control. We have a contractual relationship with the Lincoln County Sheriff's Office, but there was an incident during my tenure as mayor where we had a small-time exotic pet dealer in Walport who had pythons and other large and exotic reptiles, and when allegations of neglect of these animals came up, no one knew what to do. And so from the perspective of the leader of a small town, it can be very problematic in terms of how do you deal with these animals. And I think that this is an important bill because it contains an exemption for responsible people like the people that you've heard from who do a good job of caring for these animals. They're not going to be affected. The people that I think are targeted by this bill are people who make ignorant and misinformed choices get a little cute baby cuddly tiger cub or a little infant monkey, thinking it's so cute they're going to give it to their kids or whatever, and 2 years later have a major problem on their hands. And I would say that a lot of the wildlife sanctuaries are not full of animals that have been shut down because of bills like this. They're full of animals that come from people who make these bad choices, and I think that that's really what we're targeting here. I confess I have a fundamental philosophical objection to the idea of keeping what is a wild animal as a pet in an unnatural situation. I think it's wrong, and I think that this addresses that concern too. But I understand that there are responsible people, like the people you've heard from, who do a good job with their animals, and they are protected under the exemptions to this bill. So I think the bill is a good idea, and I would urge you to vote yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Jan Mothershed. I'm here as a private citizen, but also here because of my 30 years experience at Oregon Zoo, and in that time period working with the public and a lot of other zoos and facilities and participating in various state and city and county hearings and procedures like this. There are so many points and issues that it's impossible, so I'm going to keep it really short. There are three main things that I just wanted to stress. The safety and the health issues, which are, in my feeling, as strong for the animals, which aren't always getting the care that they need when people aren't as well-informed and experienced as some of the people we've heard from today, because that's very common, but also public safety, which is why you see so many more states going this route of limiting who can become licensed. And most recently, I've talked to officials from the states of Tennessee and Louisiana, and it would really be good, I think, for people in your situation to do the same. The Center for Disease Control now ranks zoonotic diseases, which are those that transmit from animals to humans, that they account for 3/4 of all of the emerging infectious diseases that they are concerned about. And just because you're not aware of what diseases are doesn't mean they don't exist. Professional zoo veterinarians and staff with many years of experience know enough to always be concerned about the diseases that come with any of these species, and it's an ongoing field of study and learning, and it's a real threat. The CDC has even opened a center to better prepare and monitor zoonotic diseases that are considered a threat to our national population. I'm not a medical person, but I have access to lots of information, and some of the diseases are like the hantavirus, plague, salmonella, which is not only carried by reptiles but many other species, SARS, which is a very acute respiratory syndrome. Primates are especially known for the diseases that they carry, which has been testified to as 7 pages of diseases. And I mean, such things as herpes B virus, tuberculosis, hepatitis, and many others that they can be carrying and you do not know. A second big issue for me is conservation issues, which doesn't play in on the surface, doesn't seem like it plays into what we're dealing with here, but it really does, because more and more research and studies are showing that all these animals represent, you know, the exotic animal trade, which is huge, billions of dollars a year, second only in value to illegal trade in drugs. And it's also becoming known to be one of the biggest causes of decline in species, both endangered and non-protected species, because there hasn't been a real close...
I'm going to ask you to wrap up,
okay,
because I need to have at least one more panel.
All right, I'm sorry. It's also a threat to native species, which we've seen western pond turtles wiped out in the state of Oregon and in the state of Washington from pet turtles being released. Florida has exotics flourishing that they're trying to control. It's also kind of counter to anti-cruelty and humane laws, because so many people don't do their homework before they get the animals. So I would just encourage the committee to do as much research as possible and to take all things into consideration. I'd also just like to say that I don't think that this bill is contradictory to the USDA bill. If you want an animal like this and you're qualified and you meet all this housing specs as a pet, you don't need to have a permit to breed it. And so, you know, that's not a contradiction in having those two.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
the next hearing, this will be the last panel we're going to be able to hear, and because of the short time, we'll schedule this for a work session on Tuesday. So, and I'm still going down those people over 100 miles, so if you came close, you're probably not going to get a chance. Mariel Seal, is that correct? And going down over 100 miles, is it Elizabeth White? And absolutely.
And I would too. I'd let
really? That's fine.
That's fine.
Yes, he may. Thank you. And if you wanted to let someone else in your mind,
no,
that's fine.
I'll let Molly go.
Okay, that's great. I have no problem with that. And the other person, now Clackamas is not over 100.
No.
Okay. Stephen, is it Hip? Did I get that wrong?
Hicks.
Oh.
Hicks.
Oh, Hicks. You were coming up next anyway. So now Michael. No.
Higgs. And
Higgs.
I'm down.
Oh, Higgs. There you go. You got it. Okay. That'll be our group.
So can I go first?
Sure. Thank you. And thank you for those who were gracious enough to allow these others to speak. So thank you.
Thank you for allowing us to speak today. I appreciate it. My name is Molly Schaefer. I've been breeding exotic animals in Oregon for the last 22 years. I have a USDA license. I do believe that I will be affected in a number of ways. First of all, I don't sell a whole lot of animals in the state of Oregon, but you are taking those potential customers away. I have many customers that want a cat in the future, and I've put them off for 5 or 6 years because they've had children, and I will not sell to people with children. And now I feel like I've done them a disservice because they'll never have the opportunity to have these animals. The other thing that I have a big objection to, and I'm just guessing numbers, but I would guess 3 to 1 there's animals in this state that are not permitted for a number of reasons. And I have talked to a lot of people over the years that have animals in this state illegally and did not even know they were illegal. When people buy an animal, most likely they buy it from out of state. And when it comes from out of state, the veterinarian that does the health certificate, which is needed in order to ship an animal on an airplane, is supposed to call ODA for an import permit. And at that point, ODA would say, no, you can't ship it because it's not legal in this state. However, I have found that most times, because Oregon's one of the few states where you have to do that, veterinarians don't know that. So most animals come into this state without a permit, and import permit number. Most of those people have called their city or their county in which they live in and have been told, oh no, we don't issue licenses for exotic pets. Or they'll call Fish and Wildlife and they say, no, we don't issue licenses for exotic animals. They never have the opportunity. They don't know what agency to call is what I'm trying to get across. They don't understand that they have to call Department of Agriculture. There's so many agencies in this state, and the average person will not know who to call. So my concern is for those animals that are here currently illegally. If this passes as is, they will not be able to permit their animals. They will be illegal as soon as this passes. And those animals, if those people are turned in, will be confiscated. And according to the state police officers I've spoken with, will most likely be euthanized. Now, as a USDA licensee, I will be affected because when the state agencies call me, because they know me, they're going to say, will you take this animal? I'm already full of rescues. I have no funding other than my own income. I can't take any more animals than what I have, but at the same time, how am I going to say no and have the animal put to sleep? Our sanctuaries are full. I've talked to Polly at Oregon Primate Rescue. They have no more room. Our cat sanctuary is full. These cats have to go, and monkeys, not just cats, they have to go somewhere. There's nowhere for them to go, and what's going to happen is they're going to be euthanized. Some of these animals are endangered species, which will violate the Federal Endangered Species Act. If the state of Oregon kills them, then the feds are going to get involved in that. I just feel like there's a hole in the bill. And separate from that, I'd like to suggest that perhaps we restart the Pacific Northwest Exotic Club to take some of the pressure off of the zoo. Perhaps they could refer all those calls to us, and we could explain to people what they need to do to be permitted and how to care for those animals. We'd be more than happy to do that. So that might take pressure off of the zoo.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Stephen Belknap. I'm a USDA licensee, an AZA member, and an Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife licensee. Just a couple of real quick comments. I've given you packets that are from CDC and references included thereon on the safety and health aspects regarding exotic animals for the last 17 years. Organizations that would lead you to believe that, in fact, these animals cause severe harm and or diseases to people are greatly over-exaggerated and just not true, as you'll see on your reference packet material. In the last 17 years, there's been 16 deaths by large cats, and I'm talking 250-pound cats and up. There's been one person killed by a disease from a primate, and that was at a research facility. So to believe that these animals are inherently dangerous by either disease transmission or safety factor is just simply not true based on statistics. One of the other issues that I have with the way the current regulation is reading is the exemption for AZA. I am an AZA member. However, the AZA is a private membership organization, paid membership organization. To exempt a group based on private membership would open the state to potential discriminatory suits. There are many other organizations that do basic same guidelines that AZA does and has facility accreditations very similar to AZA's that are also private organizations. So I would caution you about making AZA the only exemption as far as a private membership organization goes. We have been assured by the state veterinarian that hybrid cats, meaning Savannahs, Servals, Bengals, Safaris, etc., would be exempt. However, the exact terminology as in the proposed regulation still says Felis domesticus, which is only a domestic cat, no cross. So the terminology still would not allow a hybrid, of which there are thousands, if not tens of thousands, of owners in Oregon. Also, I would offer my assistance in any way that I could help the Agriculture Committee. I helped write the original ORS 609-305 with Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife and ODA about 22 years ago. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Steve Higgs. I'm a USDA exhibitor, and we do approximately 10 to 12 fairs in Oregon and Washington. And one of our big things is we do exhibit exotic animals as well as reptiles, crocodilians, and so forth. And one of our biggest things that we do try and push and promote at these fairs is the care, the housing, and what the people might look at as far as what their future is going to be, as far as trying to raise a cute, cuddly little kitty cat that turns into a big cat. So our big aim is, and I didn't realize that the USDA was going to be exempt, but our big thing is that for us to continue to do what we're doing, we need our breeders and our people to continue doing what they're doing and to also help keep these animals alive in the future. That's what I think.
Thank you.
Sure. Can I make one more suggestion? Certainly. Perhaps if we made laws saying that the people of Oregon would have to purchase their animals within the state and make laws regarding what the breeders have to do to be responsible salespeople, quote, of these animals, so that you could be insured that if I sell a serval to somebody with a three-year-old, I'm liable. And I have no problem with that. And I have no problem. I spend a lot of nights up till midnight on the phone with people trying to tell them how to take care of their animals. I have no problem with that whatsoever. So perhaps that's another option that you could explore, is to just keep illegal animals from coming in out of state, make them legal, and make us responsible to make sure the people have a permit before they're allowed to purchase the animal. But it's just a suggestion.
Okay, I appreciate that. Any questions?
Just one. What type of, I was trying to get from your letter, what type of animals do you raise?
I do small exotic cats. I have fennec foxes, which are a little 3-pound mm-hmm. chihuahua-sized fox that are also on the ban. And I do several different primates. I do ring-tailed lemurs, and I do African bush babies. And then I also have African livestock, hoof stock.
Okay. Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We have most of our committee, and I've talked to the others who are here, and I'm feeling right now that we will move to a work session, and so we have so many things to take care of the rest of the way out. So I'm going to close the public hearing on 3437, and we'll open the work session on 3437. You know, any discussion before we start talking about the bill itself, and we okay with the work session? And we have one more person coming. There he comes. We just opened the work session on this one. I guess what I would like to say is I certainly appreciate everybody being here. I mean, I think this has been a good hearing and talking to a lot of people, getting the testimony, and I appreciate the people's sincere work on this. And I personally am really impressed with the number of people who do the right thing with these animals. A number came and talked to me yesterday. I'm still one of those people who believes that it's not the right thing to do. And so I guess what I would do is I'll entertain a motion. Representative Clem, do you want to make a motion about the amendments?
Dash 3. Okay. Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 3437.
Okay. Representative Clem has moved the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 3437. Is there any discussion? Everyone?
Just one. Sure. Clarify a question. I think these are the amendments that
exempt
the license holders.
Yeah.
I'm in support of the amendments.
Yeah. Okay. Is there anybody opposed to the amendments?
I am.
You opposed the amendments? Okay. So let's take a roll call vote.
Representative Flynn?
Aye.
Representative Binkfelder?
Aye.
Representative McPherson?
Aye.
Representative Maurer, excuse. Representative Smith?
Aye. I mean, no. I didn't know we were going to work.
Aye.
Chair Robles.
Aye. So the amendments pass. Representative Clem, a motion on the main bill.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3437 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Okay. Representative Clem has moved House Bill 3437 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Representative Clem.
You know, to be honest, I'm certainly in support of the idea in terms of the public safety component of it. I'm a little confused still myself about the whole licensing and the first time. My intention is to support the bill. Support to move it from committee to the floor, do some more research, talk to some more people in between, reserve my own rights on the floor. I think that I'm comfortable with it, but we don't have enough time to get to some of the questions. And there's always the Senate side, too, where, you know, additional work. And I would actually like to take this gentleman up on his offer to have a conversation in the meantime, and I'd be willing to participate in that to see if there are additional work that could be done at some point.
Okay. I appreciate that. Any other discussion? Hearing none, we'll have the roll call vote.
Representative Binkfelder?
Aye.
Representative McPherson?
Aye.
Representative Maurer, excused. Representative Smith?
No.
Representative Bogus?
Aye.
Representative Clem?
Aye.
Chair Robles?
Aye. Motion passes. It will go to the floor. Thank you very much.
The carrier.
Got to go back to him.
It's your bill.
I will carry this bill. I won't have to carry two of them. Thank you. And again, I want to thank everybody. Oh, I will close the hearing on the work session on 3437. And before I close the meeting, I do want to thank all of the people who came here and testified. And many of you don't know this, but Representative Clem was a student of mine, and he said he's going to work on some things. He will work on those things. So he has done that in the past, so I appreciate that offer as well. So, anything else for the committee? Then we will close the committee on Ag and Natural Resources. Thank you.